The Aussie Fire podcast is a collaboration between Strong Money Australia and Perla, Australia's favourite boring long-term investing platform. Join our hosts, Dave from Strong Money Australia and Hayden from Perla, as they discuss all things financial independence. At Aussie Fire, we're big fans of sharing experiences and talking about money. However, please note that any advice is general and does not consider your financial situation, needs, or objectives. Consider whether it's appropriate for you and, if in doubt, speak to a licensed financial advisor. Hi, and welcome back to Aussie Fire. In this episode, we're going to discuss the fine art of balancing your future goals with your current desires. And this is not always an easy thing to do, because quite often our future goals and our current desires are in conflict with one another. Most of society focuses solely on short-term desires, you know, enjoying the present, having fun. And they are really important things for you and things that sometimes you might accidentally not get enough of, but they do come at the expense of the future. And that's something that we need to think about and balance up against each other.
And I suppose on the other side of the coin, Hayden, is the FIRE community. And so I think a lot of times we're trying to create a different future than what most people have. And so instead of focusing on short-term desires, we tend to focus on long-term desires and long-term goals. And so while that makes a lot of sense, given what our values and what our priorities are, I mean, we can take it too far quite easily in the other direction. And you've probably seen this with certain people in the FIRE community. I certainly have. And so what tends to happen is we can focus on our future goals so much that it starts to take away from our ability to enjoy our life today. So I suppose it's important to know where to draw the line, because there's no official line where you know where you've gone too far. So sometimes it can be a bit of trial and error. So today we'll try and explore a bit of how to get the best of both worlds, you know, enjoying our current life while also working towards a future that we're excited about. So we'll share some strategies to help you balance your goals while also enjoying your present day and not going to such an extreme level, and also trying to help you stay motivated along the way. Because I suppose that's the thing that happens if you focus too much on the future and you don't enjoy today as much, it'll actually be unsustainable, because you'll kind of lose enjoyment and lose enthusiasm for your current lifestyle. And so I suppose your energy will actually kind of fizzle out, because you lose motivation to keep that going. So we'll get into that as well.
Yeah, Dave, I think, you know, we've talked previously in other episodes about how you and I mean, you know, our interest in FIRE and our interest in saving money, and over the years, you know, approaching things with that scarcity, like in the last episode. I'd love to hear about some times that you have put your current desires on hold to chase future goals, you know, basically not spending money or doing something unpleasant to reach FI quicker or with more money. What are some times you've done that and you look back on them now and you think that was maybe a little bit crazy, or like you even aren't sure and you just question, did I ever do that?
So I suppose going back quite a few years now, I did put my future goals far, far higher in terms of their importance and how I was feeling at the time in terms of enjoying my life. So, well, one of the ways I did that, I guess, was working a lot more hours. So I would work overtime at my job in the warehouse where I worked. I'd work maybe an extra 10-hour shift a week, or I would stay back late at night and do overtime. I did that quite a bit, an extra 2 hours. So instead of finishing at like 2 a.m., yeah, like a common shift I did was 4 p.m. to 2 a.m. And so a lot of times I would stay back to 4 a.m. And so I'd end up getting less sleep if I did that for several nights, which I often did. And then that would lead to me being grumpy, and then I'd be tired and I wouldn't exercise because I wouldn't have the energy to do so. And then I'd be just kind of moody and not very happy. And so eventually that led to me burning out a little bit, I guess. And I eventually reined in those work hours and kind of wound it back a bit, but that definitely had an effect on how much I enjoyed my current life. At the time, I didn't really mind too much, because I was framing it in the sense of, this is more important to me, like getting to my goal is actually more important to me than being happy in the moment. And so I don't really regret that, to be honest. But there were some other times where on the spending side of things, I did cut back things probably too far to the point where I didn't want to go out for coffee and I didn't want to go out for lunch and do different things. Like I would just try and minimize everything essentially because I was trying to get my spending number to the point where it was as low as possible so that I needed less investments and less wealth to be able to actually retire. So I probably did go too far in that direction and it did noticeably reduce how much I enjoyed my life at that point. So later on in the journey, after having done that, I did kind of also loosen up on that side of things too. So yeah, that's about all I could tell you there, mate. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I have a few questions about that, Dave. That's all right. I think I'm fascinated by that background. And I think you talk about these night shifts that you do, you know, and I find that idea so interesting to me, the idea of, and I'm not a perfect sleeper, you know, I've done some stupid things like this too, but you stay up late, you get extra money, you kind of burn your body into the ground in terms of, you know, consistent, reliable sleep, all in the favor of trying to retire early so you can live more years of your life in joy. Did it ever occur to you at the time, like, hey, maybe I'm shortening my lifespan as long as I'm trying to increase the time that, you know, I might retire early? Was that a conscious thing? Were you like, I know I'll be able to retire way earlier than this will cost me in terms of my health? Was it like something that clicked later? Like how what's your relationship with that been?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Look, I was aware that, I think everyone at work was aware, and we had heard the stat, and I think it's been proven that people who do shift work, it does tend to have quite a detrimental effect on your life expectancy. And so I wasn't really bothered with that because I knew I wasn't going to be doing that for 40 years. If that was the case and I was going to have to stay there for 40 years, I probably would have chosen something else, to be honest, because I definitely didn't want to give 5 or 10 years of my life away just to do a different job and make a bit more money. So that would have weighed heavily on my choice to stay there and do those hours if I knew it was going to be like a sort of a permanent thing. But I always viewed it as short term, like short term pain, long term gain type situation.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's good that you kind of approached it with that thoughtfulness of like, you know, this isn't forever. I think that makes a huge difference. The other thing I was curious about was you talked about, you know, you maybe didn't go out to coffee with friends or something. You talked about that in kind of like a regretful way. Is it the case that if you could do it all again, you would probably have more fun? Or do you think that's kind of, it's always easy now that you are financially secure to look back and be like, I should have spent the money. But realistically, when you look at it, like if you did it again, you'd probably do the same thing. Like how has hindsight helped change that, if at all?
Yeah, I've actually thought about this a fair bit. So it's kind of a conundrum because you can look back and say, oh, I should have done this or I should have done that. But when you're looking back at something like that, you're looking at it with different, like through a different lens and often with different values because your priorities and your values change over time. So the decision you made in the moment might have been the perfect decision based on your values and priorities at the time. But then when you look back 7, 10 years later, it's easy to look at that and be like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. I should have done it a different way. But you're forgetting that your priorities at the time were different to what your priorities are now when you're judging your previous behavior. So I think it's important to consider that. But looking back, I mean, it's easy to say, but I probably would have spent a bit more money because some of the things that I was looking at were like small amounts, like $5 here, $15 here, whatever. And obviously small amounts do add up. And I'm definitely not one to say, like, I'm not one of these people that's like, oh, just cover your big expenses and don't worry about the small ones. I'm kind of like, look at everything and see what's important that you can trim back in the big areas, because obviously that's going to be the most impactful. But it's also worth looking at smaller areas too, because if money's going out the door and you're not really getting that much out of it, then you just want to question it, even if it's only a small amount, because I mean, what's the point of it if you're not getting that much out of it? But looking back, I probably would have spent a bit more on those smaller things, especially things like, you know, going out to eat, going out for coffee, or maybe an extra holiday or two, something like that. And it wouldn't have really made that much of a difference. But it's easy to say that now. But at the time, my top priority was financial independence. So that's the lens through which I made all of my decisions, essentially.
It's interesting you say that because, you know, the idea about, you know, are those little things relevant, you know? And I think you, I, and probably a bunch of our listeners have thought about that too. Okay, if I buy a house and the house price goes up or down by $10,000 or $20,000, that just has blown out months of me meticulously getting a small coffee instead of a large, what's even the point? And I've had those conundrums too. And I think for me, my approach has always been, I need to think about it like a mentality, you know, in terms of, I know that saving a dollar by getting something smaller or different or getting the cheaper cheese or something at the grocery store, that will not materially sum up probably. But if I don't take some action there, suddenly today it's the $1 cheese, tomorrow it's, you know, the $2 beef, the next day it's the $3 packet of chips. Without that demonstration of discipline, it kind of gets away from me. At least that's what happens with my personality.
Yeah, I think that's the case with a lot of people. It is kind of a mindset you adopt, like a value-based mindset, right? Instead of just spraying money everywhere, it's like, okay, what am I getting for this money? And can I get the same thing at a lower cost, or can I get something better for the same cost? So it doesn't always have to be like the lowest cost possible. But I suppose just circling back to my experience and kind of going hardcore with the saving, I actually think that that's, I mean, I've heard from quite a few readers that that's what they did, because they get excited about FIRE. You know, you find out about it and you're like, oh my God, I can retire in 10 or 20 years or whatever it is. And it just kind of, it blows your mind to the point where you're just so excited and you're just like, oh, I just want to do this. And you're just plowing as much money as you can into investing or whatever you're doing. And so it makes you not want to spend any money at all so you can reach this goal sooner. But so I actually think that that's useful. It's useful to go over the top at the start. And so I think that sounds strange, but I do think it's true. And the reason I say that is when you cut back so much after living maybe a normal type lifestyle, quote unquote normal, you kind of prove to yourself that you don't need anywhere near as much as you think you do to live a perfectly good lifestyle and be happy. Like, you can, obviously you can go too far, but I think taking a more radical approach at the start, it just kind of proves to yourself that your needs are less than you think. And then in the future, anytime you want to, you can always dial things back. But I do think that it's useful. I just think it's kind of underappreciated because, like you said before, it's easy to look back and be like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. That was too much or whatever. And there's some truth to that. But I do actually think it's more useful than not.
It's so interesting you say that, Dave, because like I had a similar experience when I first kind of started getting interested in financial independence about 4 or 5 years ago. Where when I first found out about it, I sat down with, you know, a pen and paper, not really like a computer. And I figured out that for every $10 that I didn't spend, for every $10 that I could save, you know, in a savings account or invest, if I held on to that $10 for, you know, 30 years, basically until like an early retirement, that every $10 was 1 cent of passive income a week when I retired. And it's like that link between the present and the future kind of like plagued me, because then it's like, okay, you go out for dinner, and you're like, okay, well, $20, $30. It's like, man, if I do this, like it stacks up so quick. And that there was that constant tension between me picturing myself when I was older and me picturing myself when I was younger. And in some ways, I was very naive in my early 20s. I always used to think, oh, if I waste $10 on a trip to Europe or something, $10,000, then I'll just earn it back next year. Like if I spend more this year, I'll just spend less next year. And it wasn't until I kind of understood that there's that phrase, I don't know what the saying is, but you know, the idea that a dollar now is worth, you know, $10 in the future because of compounding. And that totally messed up my relationship with money for a while, because I always felt like every dollar I was enjoying myself with now was punishing my future self 10 times over because of how much more it would be in the future.
So do you, like when you say it messed up your relationship with money, do you think that it did more harm than good? Or are you saying that you got most of the benefits of it, but you took it a little bit too, you got a little bit too enthusiastic with that, with looking at the future metrics of like in 30 years I'll have this or in 50 years I'll have this? Do you think it, like how much good do you think it did versus how much harm do you think it did with your relationship with money?
It's so hard to unpack because it would be a bit of everything. There'd be some really great stuff and some bad stuff. I think the main thing is that without really getting interested in it, I wouldn't have the mentality now to keep trying to save money every little corner in a way that's probably healthier. Like I'll give you some examples. You know, we have a fairly complicated transport system in Sydney in terms of the pricing, but years ago, basically if you tapped, what would you call it? Like, you know, tapping on as in, you know, getting on the train. If you tapped on after 7 p.m., you got a 30% discount. You got a 30% discount for your travel if you did it within, you know, not peak hour. So if I had a friend who was like, hey, do you want to go get dinner at 7? I'd always push them and be like, can we do 7:30? Literally on the basis of like turning my $3.80 fare into like a $2.70 fare or something like that. Because I was like, why not? Like, who cares what time it is? You know, it's $1.10 and it's $1.10 home. It's like $2.20 for nothing more than a slight rearrangement. I wouldn't push them. If they said no, I wouldn't be like, I'm canceling then, you expensive fiend. I would just say, okay. But, you know, a lot of the time people would move. Or another one was, you know, whenever I'd have a friend say, oh, let's go to the zoo, I'd say like, why don't we go to this park out in Western Sydney? I haven't been there. It's free. You know, I went on this long tale of like, you know, you can just go walking around Sydney Harbour. You can go to the beach. There's all these things you can do for free. There's a bunch of activities that I avoided like the plague, like going to the cinema, because I was like, why do that? It wasn't that I didn't want to do those things. They were fun, but I felt like I hadn't exhausted the other things yet. So for sure, sometimes you look back and you think, oh, I probably should have just done that to, you know, maintain a relationship or something. And other times you look back with, I guess, a sense of pride about what you tried to build for the future. Because I think that's another element of it, right? Is when you forego some current desires for your future self, it can be quite a motivating thing, you know, because it adds so much more purpose to your day as opposed to just kind of indulging in the moment.
Yeah. I think you highlighted something there that a lot of people resonate with, because the people who go down this path and they end up, you know, passionately saving as much as they can, I find that a lot of us end up in the same lens that you did, like gamifying the system a bit and trying to gamify this strategy of saving as much as possible. So like, oh, I won't go here, I'll go here. And then trying to do all this free stuff, which is like perfectly good things. There's so many things that we can do that is either low cost or free that I think a lot, most people tend to underappreciate by quite a lot. I suppose where you draw the line is, how much effort are you, how much mental effort and maybe even physical effort and possibly even inconvenience, how much of that are you putting up with just to save a few dollars? And so if it's not much effort or very, very little or no effort, then okay, fine, it probably makes sense, especially if you enjoy those things equally as much as you enjoy things that might cost more money. But there's obviously a line in the sand somewhere along those lines where it starts to become a lot more effort and you're probably putting in too much mental energy into something and trying to create a set of circumstances to where you can save as much as humanly possible, but you're not getting a whole lot of return for all of that extra mental effort. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. And I think sifting out what is worth it and not worth it is the biggest challenge of it all, right? Like even for me, I had friends who would say, oh, did you hear that Messina's giving out free ice cream? Do you want to go? And I even when I had very little money, I'd say no, because I you know what happens when they give out free food? The queue's like a kilometer long.
Oh yeah.
And I'm like, I don't want to go stand in a line for an hour just to save $6 on ice cream. So it's interesting because even at my, I guess, stingiest, you might say, you're always still making a decision. It's just a question of, you know, where it falls on the spectrum. And I think a good example, you talked about, you know, time and effort. I think the other one's also impact, because in 2020, I was kind of at probably the peak of my recent savings trend. I think I spent that year, I could break it down for you quickly. I think I spent 10 grand on rent in like a share house. And then I spent, I think it was like 4 grand on food for the year. And then another 4 grand on transport, medical, and like $300 on everything else. So I was purely just enjoying like life as you can in Sydney for free with whatever you can get out of public transport and a motorbike, right? And what was interesting about the food part, that four grand is a very small amount to spend on food for the year, but 2/3 of what I was eating fell into 2 grand of that. And that was takeaway. So 2/3 of my meals in 2020 ended up being takeaway. And it was this time when, you know, IKEA was doing dollar hot dogs and McDonald's were doing like dollar burgers. And, you know, I kind of had the ring of 5 or 6 places to go to that all had their kind of, you know, cheapish meals. And you don't spend a lot of time thinking about the impact there. You're so excited about how much money you're saving that you don't think about, you know, kind of like your situation with work and staying up late. At least you were probably more conscious of it than I was. I wasn't sitting around thinking about how destructive this might be for my health. you know, I might end up, all this money I save for financial independence, I might end up spending in 20 years on medical bills to unwind my wrongdoings in 2020. So it's super important to consider the impact of what you're doing as well, because it can have huge detriments.
That's interesting. So you're on the frugal health plan, mate, with the $1 meals here and there.
Well, it takes time. Like, even now, I've changed how I eat quite a lot in the last 3 years. And now even it's like I have to overspend on food sometimes in my head quite a lot, because I'm like, you just have to make some things matter, you know, like it doesn't, to your point, like that's, I guess that's what maturing in the space is like. We talk about people go through this journey of, you know, they're kind of a little bit maybe reckless with their spending, and then they think about financial independence as an idea, and then they get really excited and motivated, so they way cut down spending. And then there's just a maturing process where you start to really identify what are the battles worth winning and the battles worth fighting, right?
Well, it gets a bit tricky, right? Because just like any kind of habit, you get better at saving over time. So you, like, your mind always looks for new ways to save and different ways to like reduce your expenses. So you actually get better at kind of denying yourself certain things over time. It's almost like your discipline builds up. And you get better at saying no to things that you might want or different desires. You get better at kind of shutting those down and quietening down that voice in your head, which I do think is probably helpful overall, but obviously we can go too far. But I do think it's helpful, because most people are in the opposite direction, who like they have something in their mind, oh, I want this, and then they just go and get it or go and buy it or whatever. So it's kind of the other side of the spectrum, where you get better at saying no to yourself rather than yes to yourself over time. So it's, I suppose we want to try and bring it back to more of a central point, to where we've got the awareness of these desires that pop into our head, and we're able to better filter what truly deserves a yes and what deserves a no. So it's about finding that happy middle ground.
That makes total sense to me. And I think the last thing for me too is about challenging the assumptions about how you live your life. And I notice this a lot is, you know, when you decide about should I save money here or not, without realizing it, you've made huge assumptions about the kind of questions you're asking. And a really good example, if that's too abstract for me, is when I kind of started trying to save money, there was always this debate about should I put the heater on? You know, it's like a heater is like a 2000 watt heater. That's maybe like 70 cents an hour. That stacks up really quickly in terms of spending, you know, and then people say to you, oh, just put on jumpers and pants and things. And it's like, they're true. That's true. But I'm not someone that loves to do that. You know, like getting rugged up is nice, but I enjoy like the room I'm in being warm. It's like a nice feeling, or the space I'm in being warm.
Just put on a jumper and do some push-ups, mate. You'll be right.
Yeah. I have done that. That's for sure. And then, you know, I discovered maybe 6 years ago, like electric blankets. That's not an amazing thing for me to discover. Most people have probably discovered them. But I realized that an electric blanket uses about a 20th of the electricity of a heater. So, you know, if you're in bed at night, it's like, oh, this electric blanket, I can run this for 3 whole nights, 8 hours if I want to, as opposed to running the heater just for like 80 minutes. And I didn't have people in my life that had electric blankets. And it's not, you really have to sometimes stop and try and expand your horizons, because you and the people around you, particularly family, they just have a way of living. And there's so many, like I got a motorcycle because I was torn constantly between, I don't want to buy a car. I know that's like a financially bad decision if I live in, you know, center part of Sydney, but I can't walk and cycle everywhere. It's raining. You know, I'm not that strong willed that I can just cycle through the rain. So like there was a middle ground. No one in my life had a motorcycle until my housemate bought one. And I was like, oh, that's a great idea. So thinking about all these different things you can do outside of your box can be a huge way. And I think millennials are actually quite good at this, because I mentioned that electric blanket article. That electric blanket story. And there was this article I read years ago that was like, it was like millennials question why they should heat the air. You know, they were like, it's a very millennial thing to decide that, you know, we're not going to heat the air anymore because that's not a smart way to get warm. There are much more intelligent ways to get warm. So, you know, thinking of new ideas is massive for me.
Well, that's cool. I actually like, just in general, I like the habit of questioning everything and questioning the way we do certain things and why. because as you kind of pointed out there, every kind of decision that we're making is it has its own set of trade-offs, right? So we can obviously work more now, but that gives us more money to invest, which might help us retire earlier, but that also means that we have less time now, either for our friends or to spend on our health or whatever. So there's always this give and take, this push and pull situation going on. So I suppose it's about trying to create a situation that you're happy with and a set of circumstances where the trade-offs are acceptable to you. So it has to be within reason, and you'll know if you've gone off track because you'll only be able to sustain a certain savings rate or a certain work schedule for a period of time before you know you're becoming unhappy and you're becoming kind of burnt out and you're not feeling enthusiastic about the life that you're living. There's only so far you can take that. So I think it's important to keep that in mind, and you want to create a lifestyle that you can sustain for a decent period of time, because financial independence isn't something that's going to happen in 6 or 12 months. It's something that's going to take a period of many years. So you can't expect to have an unbalanced lifestyle and then, you know, be able to sustain that for 10 or 15 years. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, that makes sense, Dave. I think you've probably been thinking about this a bit longer than me, just by virtue of when I got into it. Have you, I don't know, you have your blog as well, where you get to hear from a lot of people. Is there anything that you've experienced or you've heard people experience that's been helpful in finding ways to essentially stick to a savings goal without, you know, going too far, like something more structural than just kind of think about it?
Mm. Well, yeah, that's the approach I take, is more of like the mindfulness type setup, like question each decision and decide whether that's worth it based on your priorities and your values at the time. But you know, after speaking with so many people that have reached out to me with their own approaches and what works for them, I've noticed that a couple of approaches tend to be quite popular and quite effective that people have found. So one way is obviously to automate your savings and essentially be happy to spend what's left over. So maybe you earn $1,000 a week or whatever, $2,000 a week, doesn't matter what the figure is, but you decide, okay, I want to save X amount per month. And so you set that aside as like your minimum savings target, and you automate that. And then the rest of the money is free to spend as you please. And so that can help you not only hit your savings target, but do it in a way to where if there's money left in your account, you're not going to overanalyze each decision because your savings goal has already been hit for that month. And so that creates a lot less mental load and a lot less, I suppose, anxiety over each expense that you might, you know, go out and choose to indulge in. So I think that can be pretty useful just in terms of simplicity and peace of mind. If you can, you know, if you're happy to just decide on a certain amount and then whatever happens with the rest of your money after that, it doesn't really matter. You're just accepting of meeting that goal and that's it. The second approach that I've noticed is pretty effective, and it's probably more suitable for those who find it difficult to spend money on themselves, who probably know they should spend a little bit more because they're noticing that they're not enjoying their life as much as they probably could given their circumstances. And so a lot of us tend to fall into this kind of ultra frugal trap, I suppose, where you're just wanting to like maximize the numbers as much as possible. And so a strategy for those people would be something like setting aside a certain amount that's just allocated for spending. And so obviously these people are the ones who kind of take it a bit too far. So they can just begin setting aside small amounts at first, especially if they're not super comfortable with spending massive amounts because they're just not used to it by way of habit over a long time. So, you know, it might be like $200 a month or something like that for eating out and socializing and different things like that. Or it could be a travel allowance if kind of deny themselves travel for a long time. So that can work as well. And that's also quite effective for people who might be falling into this kind of super saver syndrome, I suppose you might call it.
That's really interesting. It reminds me, I found some of those work for me. I think most of my discretionary spendings with food, Dave, I'm like one of those people. I'm sure a lot of people are, but I don't do big parties or clubbing or anything crazy. So for me, it's always just like, what nice meal am I going to get this week? You know, oh, pizza's $28. Gosh, that seems so reckless, compared to just going somewhere else. And I did one thing which really helped me, which was I figured out what the average cost of me making food at home was. I think it ended up being about $6 a meal back in 2021. And why that was really useful was because I figured it actually, when I went to buy food out, it didn't make sense. Like if I saw something that was $10, like, a burger, it didn't make sense to look at the burger as costing me $10, because if I didn't eat that and I ate at home, it would cost me $6 anyway. So I kind of took $6 off everything that I would look at, and I would kind of see that price as like, this is like the premium that I'm paying for this extra thing. And it actually kind of helped me a little bit, because if I saw a $10 burger and then I saw a $14 schnitzel, the burger's only $4 more and the schnitzel's $8 more than that kind of base amount, not to get too mathy.
That's actually cool, man. I haven't heard that elsewhere, and I actually quite like that. That's very good. Have you ever thought of it in terms of, I mean, especially nowadays, I think you earn a pretty decent income. A lot of the people that are on, six-figure salaries, they'll approach eating out and so food in general and certain expenses that might save them time. They'll approach it through the lens of how much time are they spending to save that amount of money. So they might be happier to try and get some kind of healthier takeaway food, and it might only cost them, $15 or $20, but it might have taken them like an hour to prepare that meal at home. And so if they're getting, they're saving $15, $20, but they're making $70, $80, $100 in their work or their business, then, they begin to do the numbers and be like, well, maybe I should start outsourcing that, especially if it's something they might not actually enjoy, a certain activity. So there's also that side of it too. I'm not sure if you've started to think about things through that lens.
Yeah, it's interesting, Dave. I love that you brought that up, because, I think I've gone from, everything from no income to like double 200K kind of salaries before. And I've been around lots of crowds of very affluent people and not very affluent people. And I definitely see that picked up a lot. I see a lot of that, if you're earning more than $25 an hour, oh, that's US. Like any more than $40 an hour, then like it's not worth making food. I think all I'd say to that is, I get it, and I kind of agree, but I don't like when people blanket statement it. Like the idea of like, I'll have someone else clean my kitchen because it's, it only costs $20 an hour for a cleaner, whereas I earn more than that. It's like, it makes this assumption that you're somehow always going to be able to earn money at the drop of a hat, and there are like times and this is true because most people earning that kind of money, not all, but a lot of them, they're service workers. They're people doing jobs that require some thinking. And you can't think for 16 hours a day. Like I work as a software engineer. I can't, like at 11 o'clock at night or, 8 o'clock, I make dinner not because I think it's a good financial decision. It's because I know I can't just keep working, earning more money, like thinking about software design or podcasting with you. Not that we're explicitly paid for this by the hour, but it's like, it's not, it doesn't just translate all the time. Like I get it sometimes. Sometimes I'll go buy food if I'm on the clock getting paid hourly on like a massive project and I got 3 days to do it, I'll buy all the food out because it's definitely worth it, But goodness, it doesn't apply all the time.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, actually. I think it becomes often ideologically driven and sometimes even I think it's a little bit ego driven. Oh, I earn X amount, so I'm going to pay this person to do it because that's kind of beneath my hourly rate. Where a lot of times it's just being used to justify something they can't be bothered doing, which sometimes can make sense, but then you also have to be a little bit self-critical and examine, does it really make sense? Am I actually going to use that time for anything productive, or am I just going to, watch Netflix or something like that? So it can make sense, but I don't think it always makes sense. I don't think you should definitely always, outsource anything over your hourly rate, because yeah, it's definitely not that simple.
It's strange too when people on salary say this. I kind of get it, like if you're on commission or you're working casually or something, like, oh, I'm going to work overtime and then I'll order Uber Eats. I get that. Yeah. But like when you see these like office workers, I'm like, what do you mean? Like you talk as if like you just can work an extra 2 hours tonight and your boss is going to up your salary random. Like it's not how most people work. So sorry, you've touched on a sensitive topic. I used to have people in my life who were like, you wouldn't believe the things they would do to they'd be like, I'm not even going to, clean up my dishes. I'll get like an air tasker to do it,
Yeah, you see, you start green lighting yourself into laziness, I think. And it's like and part of it's ego driven, I think, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, I've seen that across the spectrum, but I think we made the point that, you know, just be more nuanced with how you look at that. It's sometimes true and it's sometimes not true.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So another strategy to stick with your savings goal when you actually have the desire to spend more money is to only allow yourself to spend more money if you increase your income. So you're kind of bribing yourself in a way. And so that can give you an incentive to, you know, work harder and do different things to increase your take-home pay and find ways to earn more. And then it gets, so that motivation is useful because then you get to live a more enjoyable lifestyle and spend more on the things that you wanted to, while also keeping your savings target the same. You keep meeting the goal that you set for yourself. So it does actually impact that in a negative way. And I also wanted to mention, I think this can get forgotten about with the idea of spending more money and all that. The idea of, we always want to keep things in perspective, right? So it's totally possible, and I think it's often we can forget about this, but it's totally possible to spend more money every single year while becoming much wealthier every single year at the same time. Those things are not mutually exclusive, but I think this often gets forgotten about. So, I mean, a lot of people in this space, obviously not everyone, but a lot, their wealth is increasing by, you know, like 20 grand a year, 50 grand a year, sometimes even more, sometimes even like 100 grand a year. If they've been on this path for quite a few years and have started to build some assets, they'll start to see their wealth grow at quite a decent rate. So if you're someone who's kind of stuck in this hyper frugality mode, try and zoom out a little bit and see the bigger picture of how your wealth has actually progressed over the last 2, 3, 4, 5 years. And so you can see the numbers growing year upon year. And so it's not too much of a stretch to realize that spending an extra, you know, 5 grand a year, even 10 grand a year, isn't going to really hurt you when your wealth is growing by many, many multiples of that per year.
That makes a lot of sense. Have you found other, like, it's so great that you've talked to so many people about it. Is there anything else you've uncovered in this space that you find helps people, you know, get motivated saving more?
I'd say the idea of rewards, because as I was saying before, the plan and the path to financial independence is, it's a long one, right? So you want to be able to stay motivated for a long time, which isn't easy. So one way you can do that is by setting yourself smaller goals, because obviously financial independence is the big goal that you want to hit. But if you set yourself smaller goals that you can hit in the shorter term, maybe 1 year, 2 years, whatever, and then tie a reward to that, that can give you enough fuel and enough energy to kind of make it to the next goal, which might be another year or two down the road. And then you can obviously treat yourself and buy yourself, I don't know, a new outfit or go on a special holiday or something like that. Whatever kind of motivates you, whatever gives you energy and motivates you and gives you excitement and looking towards the future, something you want. So you're kind of dangling the carrot in front of yourself and treating yourself a little bit like a robot in a way, where you're linking your own rewards to the progress that you make. And so I think that's useful because, like I was saying, it's a long road. So you want to make it as enjoyable as you can. And so I think research has shown that if you give yourself rewards for doing things that you want to do and reaching smaller goals, it actually does give you more motivation to continue. So I think that's important.
It's interesting, Dave. I'd love to unpack that because from my experience, like, I found that particularly difficult. And the main reason was because the joy that I get from rewarding myself sometimes is less than the kind of pain that I have from either trying to work more to earn more income or to like save by not spending. So like, if I was to ever be like, oh, once I hit 10 grand, I'll go on a holiday, I'd struggle to not sit on the holiday being like, man, I could have just like not been here and not stayed up late doing all that work at the same time, you know? And I was wondering, I can tell you how I kind of had a different approach, but you know, if someone came to you and said that, how would you guide them?
Well, it's actually interesting because I would have probably approached it the same way you did. Like, I kind of get motivated by big things, but then I'm actually not all that interested personally in celebrating. But I was listening to a podcast. I think it was the Huberman podcast. Have you listened to any of the?
Yeah.
And he was doing one on motivation, and he actually was talking about it, saying that it's incredibly important to reward yourself because it does make that connection in your brain more real, and it does fuel your motivation for the future and the next goals you set even more. It actually does have the payoff that we think. So it's important to reward yourself, even if you get there and then you're like, no point rewarding myself. I can just do something else instead, or I can just use that money for another thing. But apparently it is very important to actually follow through with the reward, or your brain doesn't have the same connection and the same benefits of setting goals and motivating in the future.
It's interesting. You can tell me what you think about this, but my approach to solving this was when I started saving, I put some money in a savings account that would earn interest, and then I put other money in, ETFs, which would, pay dividends. And I tried very hard whenever I would spoil myself to actually spend that interest or dividends, which is funny because a lot of people in the FIRE community, they get really like reinvest your dividends to like maximize growth. And I have like a mentality that's more like, at least at this stage, I like to get my dividends in my bank account because I love interest and dividends because when I spend that money, I don't feel like I'm just undoing the kind of pain I went through to get it. Like if I save $100 and then I spend 50 of that, I think, why didn't I just save 50? Whereas if I save $100 and then I get some interest off it and I still have $100, it doesn't feel like I'm unwinding or like making purposeless that pain I went through. It feels like I'm kind of, skimming the goods off the top. So that's one thing that I found worked for me, was like actually getting the dividends of investments paid into my account and being like, all of that money is just for like hyper fun. That's my splurge money because it's not making a dent in my, the income that I got to buy those ETFs in the first place.
Okay. Yeah, I get that. I see why that would be appealing. I don't think that's a bad approach at all, to be honest, because you're retaining the money that you originally could have spent. You've done like the smart, sensible thing by buying investments with it. And then so you're benefiting from the investments without losing the future productivity of that investment. Obviously, it's technically not optimal because you haven't reinvested the dividend, but it's a lot better than having spent the $100 in the first place. You've still got a $100 asset that's going to keep producing income each year. So I like that. I like that idea.
So smart people will tell me that, it's not really any economically better, but, it's psychological, right? Like pretty much everything we're talking about, it's all psychological.
Suboptimal, Hayden, naughty boy. But I suppose the other thing to mention is that, I don't know about you, Hayden, but when it comes to getting motivated, I actually get motivated by progress itself. I actually find when I'm making progress with my investments, seeing the portfolio get bigger or I'm putting money in or whatever, all of those little incremental things, they give me more fuel and more motivation to keep going. Like it reminds me I'm on the right track. I don't know if you feel the same, but I find progress itself is motivating without having a specific goal in mind, just the idea and the actual practice of having progress happen.
Well, that comes back to, I guess, what I said earlier about I knew that every couple thousand dollars I managed to invest would be a few dollars a week of passive income. And I just was like, I had no goal in mind, and I still, to some extent, don't. It was just like, wow, because I earned more, I worked harder, I spent less, I'm now going to be able to buy a coffee a week if I was to retire early indefinitely. And it was just kind of more and more, first it's a coffee, then you're like, oh, it's this, and then it's a meal. And then you realize, and after like, I think years and years and years of saving now and working very, very hard to save money and, doing it in a kid-free environment, which changes things quite a lot. It's like, I realized that with my like passive income already, I think I can pay for like half my rent. I'm like, whoa, that's like so exciting. And like, I still don't even know where I'm trying to end up with it. But I agree. It's like every step you take and you realize you're just helping your future self, which means a lot.
It's interesting because you kind of measure it in terms of I put this money in and then that gives me X amount of passive income per week or something. I actually did it a different way where it was like, okay, I'll put this money in, maybe it's $100 and then in 50 years, it'll be $1,000. I always try and look for like the biggest number to make myself more excited.
Oh, like, yeah, how's it going to compound? And it'll be $2 million.
And I always used to play around with the calculator that trying to find like the biggest number to excite myself, because I find that focusing on like, oh, $2 a week, that's not going to motivate me. I need to like look at the bigger numbers to motivate me.
That's so interesting. I love that.
I mean, we're speaking about progress, Hayden, but it doesn't always have to be progress that keeps you motivated, because I find that, you know, we're speaking about rewards earlier as well. You can always reward yourself not based on progress, because I suppose progress itself is a reward and is something that keeps you motivated, but you can always reward yourself based on just habits alone. So are you taking the actions that you want to take to get you where you want to get to? I mean, you see this all the time with people doing, maybe it's an exercise routine or something like that. But with investing, I suppose you could keep the habit of investing, you know, every single month for 12 months. And after that, maybe that triggers a reward for you. You know, you get yourself a new piece of clothing or a coffee machine or something like that. Something that motivates you. But if you can build habits and reward yourself based on the habits rather than the progress, that'll be pretty powerful in itself. And the progress will come as a result of the habits that you've built up over time. So yeah, I think that's pretty powerful. And like we said, the progress is itself will motivate you even further. So that'll just be like the cherry on top. And so that reinforces good behavior. You know, it makes you feel good about doing things that you might perceive as hard, because it's not easy to build, you know, whether it's exercise habits or investing habits or whatever. So that can help keep you on the right track and keep you motivated when you might otherwise fall off the rails. So you become kind of this pro at delaying gratification, and you've got these little rewards along the way. So it's definitely worth incorporating that into your life if you can.
Yeah, that makes sense, Dave. I think in summary, you know, we've had this healthy discussion here today about all the different ways that you can think about spending in the future, how that weighs up in the present, how that weighs up against the future. I think the big takeaway we hope we can leave everyone with is that, you know, you want to create a situation and lifestyle where you can sustain it for a long time. And a lot of people will move from extremes. They'll often start from like a hyper spender to like an underspender, mature back to something in the middle. And it's always in search of that more sustainable approach. And don't put too much pressure on yourself, because allowing yourself to spend on things that are important to you, like lunches with friends, visiting family overseas, giving generously to charity, these things can take time to figure out what the right trade-offs are. And it's quite a journey, and people can go through it for years. But as long as you're engaged and you start paying attention, that's kind of the most important first step. If you do feel yourself feeling restricted and thinking about it or trying to approach it, you know, psychologically doesn't always help, then there's a few things we talked about, you know, trying to allocate a set amount of money for spending, only spending, I mentioned, you know, it's interest or dividends, finding ways to save in other areas, isolating bank accounts, things like that. They can all make a big difference. But as long as you are thinking about it and trying to take steps, then, you know, in Dave's and my experience, people always move in the right direction with this stuff.
Yeah, well said, Hayden. All right, so that's it for this episode, guys. Hope you enjoyed that one. If you do have any topic suggestions or feedback for us, you can reach out to us on socials, or you can email us at hello@aussiefirepod.com. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks, everyone. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Aussie Fire. For more FI inspiration, head to Perla.com to browse our resources, calculators, and community insights. Perla is an authorized representative, number 128-1540 of Sandland Private Wealth, Pty Ltd, with AFSL number 337927. Knowledge is power, especially when investing. So always seek advice and or check out the relevant disclosure document for any financial product, including the PDS and TMD, before deciding. These are available from the product issuer's website. When you invest, your capital is at risk, and past performance is not a reliable indicator of future investment returns.